The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. I usually say it's a good day. Today's a sad day. The passing of Joe Gilmartin should lead any show here in town today if you're plugged into the community. And we're going to talk about Joe a little bit with Paula Bovin, but the professor is going to be with us because there's been this journalism side of the, or lack thereof, depending on whose view you talk to, or there's even some fake news. If you're a real U of A supporter through thin and thin and thinner and thinnest, you believe this is all fake news around Sean Miller. Knock yourself out. But Paula, I texted her yesterday as I was going through email and seeing stuff in social of who's making this story up, why is there so much misreporting of fact, what is not, how has this all worked together? And I figured let's turn to the professor over at Arizona State, our good friend Paula Bovin, on Sean Miller's future, because she can weigh in on both sides on that. And so we're going to do kind of a, I'd say a 101 class maybe. And that doesn't mean towards you. It just means for me. Some of it, she's maybe more adept at on this story. And I have my views and my opinions on how this has been reported and some of the holes have been punched in it. Brett Hundley will be with us today. Former Chandler High, UCLA star, now Green Bay Packer quarterback. Brett Hundley will Skype in. Brett Hundley on the Combine, which gets started this week. His view of Josh Rosen, who he is close with. And Brett is back in the Valley, so it's always good to catch up with local names. Good name there. Brett Hundley will be with us via Skype. And we'll have Talk to the Lopes today at 11 with men's tennis coach Greg Prudhomme. Talk to the Lopes every Wednesday. We talk Grand Canyon University. I am still sick, if you cannot tell. Like this microphone. Do we have Lysol, Edwin? Do we have any? We have anything at all? We have nothing? Eric, are we going to quarantine this studio? I feel like I'm just going to drip right through this show today. So I'm not complaining. I'm just giving you guys a heads up that when I'm doing this repeatedly, you guys know that I'm not snarfing on the air or any of that stuff. So let's get you caught up. What is on my mind now? Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. When we talk about protecting what matters most, that means it's your family. If you have a chance to look over your life insurance, that would be great. I'm going to be more straightforward with you. It'd be better than great. You need to do it, okay? You can get your free quote online. Log on to Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, get your free quote. Take care of your life insurance. Protect what matters most at Sagicor Now. We appreciate their support. Paula Bovin here in about 8 minutes. Joe Gilmartin passed away this morning. Joe Gilmartin was a heavyweight of heavyweights here in the Valley and actually nationally as well. We had Joe Gilmartin here in studio when Jerry Colangelo was going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. And we spoke with Joe numerous times through the years on many, many subjects. Joe not only was a heavyweight when it came to writing, but he was a mentor. He was not afraid to help those out. I would see it. I was one of those that Joe would help out. Big guy, how you doing? And it didn't matter if it was over at the Suns or the Diamondbacks. I was not here when Joe Gilmartin was the analyst on the television broadcast. Eric, you grew up with Joe. So when Joe was doing the Suns games, so this would have been with Al, I'm guessing, right? I mean, this would have been with Al McCoy.
Yeah, that was a while ago. I was just a little kid. I do remember Joe, and Joe was one of the more iconic, if not the most iconic, local media members in the Valley for quite some time.
Influential.
Definitely.
I mean, Joe would use his platform. I remember vividly, there's a couple Joe Gilmartin stories. I'm going to just share one. Joe wrote a story for the Phoenix Gazette when Paul Westfall was in trouble. It was very clear Jerry wasn't happy. It was very clear Cotton wasn't happy. It was very clear everybody wasn't happy with what was going on with the Suns, that they were underachieving. And this is what Charles was taking guys on the team playing, and KJ and Dan left a trip in Seattle to go to L.A., and Paul let him do it. And you just heard too many things that were getting out, that it was too lax, that there was not enough discipline. And I remember Joe writing a column in the Gazette. It was a weekend, and essentially he wrote that things better turn around here or Paul's not going to be the head coach. I'm doing the Suns pregame show at the time. They have a game on the road. I just brought in his column and said, this is a very interesting read by Joe Gilmartin. I read from some of it, essentially paraphrasing Paul's in trouble. And I finish the show and the phone rings in the back office. This was back, Eric, even before you and I probably got together. This was at KTAR when they were at Farnham Building, for those who watch and know what I'm talking about, over on Osborne. And the phone rings and it's Cindy Westfall. And Cindy's not happy that I would go on the air and support a column like that. And then after the game was over, I called Joe, and Joe actually came on the air on the postgame show and used a line that I will use today, and I still use today, and it came from Joe. And Joe said, well, maybe I should have used a fly swatter rather than a sledgehammer. Maybe I should have used a fly swatter rather than a sledgehammer. The key word there was maybe. Because a couple days later, Paul was fired. And it wasn't to my glee or anything along those lines. It's just he knew how to work a story, how to be a voice within the community, not a reckless voice, not a guessing voice. He was one that was very much in the corner of let's see progress here. I know that there were times where I would run into Joe Gilmartin and he would be sitting with, let's just say, Sam Smith. I'll pull a name out of a hat. Or guys that, Jack McCallum, some great NBA names. And man, when we had Joe here in studio, and it was Joe going into the Hall of Fame because his son Leo brought him in, and Joe was having a hard time hearing. And we had Jack McCallum and we had Sam Smith. Remember that show, E, when we did that? I don't know if you do or not, but we had these great names that lined up wanting to talk about Joe Gilmartin going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. And it was really cool. I just wanted to start the show out with that, that today is a tough day on one hand. Whenever someone passes away, we have our thoughts, our recollections. On the other hand, with his family and his late wife, you know, Joe, I'm sure, is in a better place. And I'll just leave it at that. So that caught my eye this morning in a big way around 8 a.m. when I saw the news from the Suns. Speaking of the Suns, if the Suns win tonight, it would put them like in fourth or fifth place in the lottery. That's how close things are. If they lose tonight, it would mean they would have a perfect February, clean sweep, not one win. They play Memphis tonight, who stinks. Memphis is right there in the hunt with the Suns. The Tankapalooza that goes on. So this game is really interesting to me tonight, even though both teams are just horrendous. And even though I don't want to keep going through this stuff, it is one that that is of interest to me for sure. And that will be tonight. As we open the show today, Sean Miller, still his status is up in the air. And we'll talk with Paula about that here in a couple of minutes. The NFL Scouting Combine is going on in Indianapolis this week. Sam Darnold says that he is not going to throw. Does that mean anything to anybody other than it's going to cause conversation? Are there going to be players that decide to not work out, not throw, not run? This seems to be becoming more and more prevalent. And it doesn't make me look at Sam Darnold any differently and say, well, I would not want him on my team. I would not want him on my draft board. There may be reasons physically he's not going to throw. I don't know. So there's that's going on. The college basketball thing other than U of A, as I'm bouncing around through the sports landscape today. If Arizona State loses tomorrow night to Cal, Cal is 212 in the RPI, in the power rankings, 212th. Problem here is ASU should roll them. The bigger problem is they struggled on the road at Cal, and I get it, it's on the road. This is a game for, while everybody's talking about U of A, Arizona State sitting over here on the sideline having been swept on the Oregon schools. That's not good. It's their final two games at home, which means Saturday's noon game against Stanford, 12:30 game against Stanford, is going to be very emotional because you have all these seniors that are going to be playing their last game. It'll be Trey Holder's last home game, Shannon Evans' last home game, Cody Justice's last home game. So there's going to be all this emotion wrapped up in the Stanford game. Fortunately, the Stanford game, Stanford's coming here Saturday after playing U of A on Thursday night. I have no idea what U of A is going to look like tomorrow night. I have no clue. I don't know if they've locked all the players down at the U of A in their basketball area and just saying, look, we are not going to let you out other than to go to a class. You're going to come back here and you're going to be so laser focused. You're going to be stampered by 50 because the world is against you. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know what Sean Miller's role is going to be. I'll talk to Paul about that in a minute. But I do know this for Arizona State. If you're one of those that says, well, they're going to make it into the postseason, just look at what they did in November. Look at what they did in December. And I would say to you, if you've noticed here in the last week or so, there's more and more conversation about what quadrant victories the program has had, that every college program has had. You're going to hear this buzz about what quadrant win did they have. So it's a new way of putting this together. I don't know what quadrant win means outside of it's a good team or a bad team. Well, Arizona State was a good team back in November and December. They're average now. So they are anywhere from an 8 seed to a 10 seed. You lose to the number 200-plus team in RPI, and you lose late. And if you were to lose Sunday, and if you were to get bounced in the first round, I'm giving a lot of ifs. They've got to win, I think, one of their last three. Meaning they've got to either win against Stanford or Cal, and they've got to win the first round game up in Las Vegas. If they get swept, they're not going to make it, I don't believe. And wouldn't that be something? The number one overall ranked team in the nation not making the tournament. The professor is next on Sean Miller and how this has all been presented to us. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona tonight with four airings this evening. Brett Hundley will be one of our guests tonight, the Green Bay Packer quarterback Chandler Highstar, on what it's like going through the combine. He's very close with Josh Rosen, no Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, all the quarterbacks. So Brett Hundley will join us tonight. You'll also hear from Brett here in about 10 minutes. The professor joins us now, Paula Bovin, good friend of the show, just a good friend in general, whether we're doing a show or not. Here's the thing on the professor. When all of this broke on Friday night, I was out with some friends and I started feeling my phone vibrate. And it had to do with Sean Miller and FBI. And from that point on, I saw where Paula was up at Oregon already with her husband, her daughter is up there. And I'm thinking, wow, the professor's right in the middle of all this stuff, wondering how she is processing it. So as this story has come to be reported in the last few days, there's been holes on the ESPN side. There's been a lot of guessing, a lot of thought-provoking commentary, which is fine. But stuff that has been put out that may not have or has turned out to not be true in terms of timeline. So I figured, because she is up the ranks at Cronkite, I would have Paula Bovin join us. How are you?
I'm good, Brad. Good to talk to you again.
It's always good to talk to you. All right, so let's go through the process. That's what we do. Process is Friday night. I'm sure you got the word, unless you were out somewhere. It looked like you were hiking somewhere around Oregon. I don't know. But you got word of this story and the initials FBI were involved with Sean Miller. Take me through your processing of this.
When I heard it, I mean, speaking quite frankly, I couldn't believe it. I mean, not that I didn't believe it, but I was really, really surprised. You know, Brad, we've both been in this business a long time, and there are always coaches you sort of hear on the side doing this or doing that. They're called dirty. Sean Miller was never one of those guys I ever heard things about, and granted, I tend to have a little Pollyanna in me where I, you know, God, this couldn't be happening, you know. But I was really, really surprised Sean Miller's name was attached because, you know, like all head coaches, but maybe more than anyone, Miller was the guy who I had always heard outworked and out-hustled everybody. You know, they'd see him in these gyms at crazy hours. He was traveling, you know, doing a lot of recruiting, not just at his assistants, but he was doing it. So, for all that, I was floored. And then what struck me Saturday was, you know, the reaction to the story got me a little bit because there were a lot of national voices calling for Miller's head. And, you know, I mean, you remember the Richard Jewell situation, right, with the Olympics.
And, sure, the Olympic bomber.
The guy that was the bomber. Yep. And, right, that's what people think. But then it was proven it was not him. Someone else came and pled guilty to it, but people still think of him as the bomber when he was an innocent guy working security who actually did a good thing and notified the police that there was a suspicious package and got a lot of people out of the way before the bomb exploded. So those kind of things always stick in the back of my head. So while, you know, it sounds like the evidence is damning, and frankly, I'm not questioning the reporter who reported it, because I don't know, he maybe has a very good source, but I am questioning a little bit, and this is not what you were asking, but just the reaction to the report of people just jumping on the bandwagon bothered me a little bit because of the state of journalism right now.
So Mark Schlabach has a good reputation, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We would say that. And so when this is just how I am, if Paula Bovin writes something back in the day, making it sound like you're old and you're not. But when Paula Bovin writes something back in the day, or the late Joe Gilmartin writes something back in the day, then I'm going to pay attention a little bit more than other names that are on the byline. That's just how I am. And that sounds very prejudicial. It's not meant to be. It's just, I trust this voice. So who is reporting this? That leads to the timeline of the DeAndre Ayton and the wiretapping that ESPN seems to have backtracked on in terms of the reporting of when was that phone call tap made. The FBI is not going to release the tape, even though the U of A diehards want to hear the tape released. So I guess what I'm wondering from you is, do you process through who reports, and does it bother you that the timeline has changed somewhat in the last 48 hours off the initial report?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, anytime I think things have to be retracted, and unfortunately for ESPN, there's been a couple things. There's been the timeline twice, and there has also been during a broadcast, I think it was of the ASU game, somebody reported that he had been fired on ESPN, mm-hmm. And then they had to retract that too. So anytime there's retractions, that hurts journalism. I'm not saying that should change how we feel about this story. Again, you know, he has a pretty good reputation. He has a very good reputation. So I don't have so much an issue with what he's reporting. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. But this sort of let's jump on this story and have opinions on it when no one else has really doing, not many other people are doing the original reporting on it, is a little bit troubling.
Okay, let's switch it around then. U of A has taken the tact of, we're just going to go into a bunker and we're not going to say anything. We're going to cancel mm-hmm. Sean's radio show. We're not going to make him available on Monday. We're not going to make anybody available on Monday. Isn't there a responsibility from the University of Arizona to not pretend like they're not pretending, that their heads are in the sand on all of this and not have anything at all in any way, shape, or form since Sunday night at Sunday night at Mack Court? I don't even call it Mack Court anymore, since mm-hmm. the game at Oregon. And I think you were at that game, weren't you? The U of A Oregon game?
Yeah, Matthew Knight Arena. I was there. It was surreal. I mean, the whole thing, you know, students were holding, those $100,000, whatever they're called, those candy bars.
The big checks. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, the big checks. It was surreal.
It's fun.
The whole thing was bizarre. And I just lost the – what did you ask me, Brad?
But should the U of A have not – U of A by now have said something, anything?
Yeah. Well, here's what's interesting to me. You know, the one response that I've seen them have was when Ann Reiman the whole thing about Miller's contract, that Darren Revelle said, hey, you know, he's going to get more money if he loses his job. And she came back with a story saying that wasn't true. And she actually got comments from the U of A, which was that. So there was transparency there. But my guess is that they're in the middle of lawyer hell right now. And that's why they're not. But I sure would like to hear her voice soon. I mean, it's Wednesday already. You know, the story broke on Friday. I can only think there's a lot of negotiating going on. I don't know. But the fact that I think the longer we don't hear something, to me seems the odds increase that Sean Miller is not going to be back at Arizona.
It's a bad look, I think, in mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. space. It's somebody rolling out on Monday, and it's Lorenzo Romar saying, I'm here to only talk about Stanford and Cal. And you guys can ask me all you want. I'm here to talk about Stanford and Cal. I mean, not, to not even address DeAndre Ayton's status, if he's going to be on the floor, you're 36 hours away, and we have jobs to do, and our job is to give the fans the information. They are providing zero access, thinking that this is the right way to go. It just bothers me that they're not being transparent on this. I don't need to know about Sean's future. I'm not that, but just even, this is your senior weekend. This is your last weekend for Parker Jackson Cartwright. Just give me something.
I think a lot of it is just sort of the legality of it is preventing them, and I'm not saying it's right. It would be nice to have a statement at least. We're looking into this. You know, we understand fans are frustrated. We want to get it right. Mm-hmm. Something. Say something that, you know, we know they're working on this and resolving it. I mean, that's clear. But sure, I think it would behoove them to come out with some kind of statement, even if they don't have a resolution right now. And, you know, they're trying to protect. I think they, you know, usually have availability on Monday with a couple players and the coach, and I think they're trying to sort of protect the players from having to answer questions about it, maybe prevent them from saying the wrong thing, something like that. So I'm not surprised. I mean, we see a lot of this sort of shutdown among college teams when things like this happen, because this, as we all know, this story is far bigger than U of A right now.
Two other questions. If you and I sat with Greg Byrne at a dinner in Portland, and we had a nice visit, and if you and I were to have that dinner in Portland again with Greg Byrne, this conversation would have to come up. What do you think? Right. What do you think Greg's thinking on all this deal, and how complicit is he? Not on just Sean Miller, but all the stuff that has happened in the short period of time since he's left.
Yeah, it's unbelievable what has happened at Arizona right now. I will say this, and I think a lot of people think he hired Sean Miller. He didn't.
He didn't.
I think that was right at the end of Livengood's tenure, if I'm not mistaken. But if things were happening under his watch, which possibly with basketball they did, and certainly seems there were things with football, some of it has to go back to the athletic director. I struggle with this one all the time, because how culpable can you be when you're running a large athletic department? How accountable are you for the people under you? I find it hard to believe he would have any knowledge of this stuff. Now, the question is, should he have had a better system in place where this stuff would have gotten caught? I don't know. How do you catch someone who's having a private conversation with an agent or someone who works for an agent? I mean, I don't know. It's a tricky situation, but I'm sure he's very frustrated at how all the stuff is unfolding with some of the people he hired.
Last question. You have been through the club basketball scene. Mm-hmm. I am going through it again. The issue, right. I had David Griffin on yesterday, the former Cavs GM, and we were talking about this, that the issue is now down to 7th and 8th graders being built up. It's not just the high school end, but it seems to me it's pretty clear there's this gap of senior year to high school, freshman year in college, where all this nonsense is going on. Were you a fan of the club scene when you were there as a parent, A, and that was not too long ago? B, do you have a resolution on this? Is it the fair market? Go out and get a job just like anybody else? What do you think needs to take place?
Yeah, I have so many mixed feelings on this. In many ways, I love the club scene because it gave my son great opportunities to play against great players, and we had some amazing coaches in that powerhouse now? The name has changed a couple times.
Yeah.
And that experience was awesome. But it's sad that the club scene is pretty much sort of almost neutralized the high school basketball scene now as being relevant. You know, there are guys who the coaches don't come, rarely they come to the high school games as much. It's now they go to the club games. And that's what's important, and that's where showcasing talent. But I don't think there's much we can do about it. I mean, it is free enterprise. They have a right to succeed. And maybe it's, you know, the AAU's biggest challenge is trying to deliver some regulation on it. I just don't know if they're a big enough body to be able to do something like that. So my feelings are mixed about it. There's some very positive, saw some very shady, but I just don't know if there's much of a way to change it.
All right. You're talking about this at Cronkite. I'm sure the kids are buzzing about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. A lot
side.
Of it, you know, yeah. because it's, and the whole thing, you know, we talk about the journalism aspect of it and the single sourcing and the, you know, how do you respond to a report? Do you take it as fact? Do you address it at all? It's very complicated because it's we're in a media world where, you know, getting stories first and getting them fast have somewhat taken priority over getting them right. And that's a tough pill to swallow sometimes.
All right. Well, if you ever see anything over here, slap me upside the head, all right?
Oh, I'll be happy to, Brad.
Yeah,
so far, so good. But
yeah. See you soon. Take care. Thanks.
All right. Talk soon. Bye.
It's good stuff. Paula Bovin there, the professor. Brett Hundley is coming up next. Packer quarterback, former Chandler High QB at UCLA with the combine. What does a quarterback go through at the combine in terms of process from getting off the plane through the weekend, and how big is the moment of just throwing versus everything else? That's next with Brett Hundley. I'm Brad Sussmat. So let's take a deeper dive into the NFL Combine getting going this week in Indianapolis. A lot of quarterbacks that are going through the process, obviously with what's going on with the Cardinals, there's going to be huge interest. And for you NFL fans across the fruited plain this year's first round, who knows how many, and even beyond the first round, how many are going to go. To give you an idea of what goes on at the Combine and what these quarterbacks have to go through, I turn to my friend and good longtime Chandler resident, former UCLA Bruin, now current Green Bay Packer quarterback, Brett Hundley. He joins us via Skype here for a couple of minutes about the combine. It is good to see you first and foremost. I'll talk to you about your season afterwards, but let's get into the combine and when you went and what are these quarterbacks expecting to go through?
Man, first off, thanks for having me. Glad to be back on with you, bud. It's a wild ride, to say the least. I remember I had one or two meals in the days I was up there. That's it, two. Because you literally wake up at 5 or 6 in the morning every day. You don't go to sleep until 1 or 2. And your day is planned all day long. I mean, you're meeting with coaches, you know, trying to get ready, you're working out, making sure, because you got to realize, and people don't realize this, you don't run or perform until the last day. And so the 2 or 3 days before that, when you're there, you're not doing anything except meeting with coaches, you know, a lot of your workout program guys who have these facilities will get a hotel across the street, so you'll have to walk over there and work out during the night when you're free. And it's just a hectic ride. So you're tired, and then you have to go perform. So it's going to go by fast for these guys.
So, Brett, when it's the first day and you get off the plane, you're already going there knowing in the back of your mind people are saying you need to do this and you need to show that, correct?
Yeah. Yes. But the problem I have is that there's all these, you know, you get a breakdown of what, you know, your strengths are, what people think your weaknesses is, what you want to show at the combine. But it's so hard because when you're there, you just got to let it loose. And a lot of guys, you know, go there and they're throwing with receivers they've never thrown before. And you got to realize, like, not every throw is going to be perfect. Not every throw is going to be, you know, what you want it to be. It's not going to be perfect. You're not going to be perfect. But you just got to go and just give it your all, because at the end of the day, you know, obviously you're not playing a game. You're not even playing 7-on-7. You're just out there throwing the football, and you're going to run a 40 and do a couple other drills. And that's really all they want to see. They're not there to see if you can throw it through a tight seam with nobody, you know, covering anybody. So you're not going to be able to show off that stuff, but you do go in with a list of positives, a list of cons. So you're just trying to give it all you got, really.
How much of this is mental this week for guys like Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and the others?
It's probably a big part mental. After doing it myself, when you look back on it, you'll realize that it is nothing but mental. Physical, you can only give what you got. I mean, physically, we're limited to whatever we can do. You know, we can't be Superman when we get to the combine or take a pill and, you know, be this magical creature. But you're always limited to what you got. And then mentally, it comes into, you have to just prepare and not be afraid or timid. Just go in there and be yourself. That's the biggest piece of advice. Go in there, be yourself. You're not going to know every question asked. You're not going to know everything they're trying to you know, you just got to be yourself. You know, you want to be prepared. You want to know every coach's name. That was one of the things I used to do going, or I did, was try to study each team's coaches. You're not going to remember, because when you get in that room, your heart's going to be racing, and you just want to go in there as natural as possible. It's hard, but that's the name of the game.
Could talk about that side of it, too, for the viewer. When those players go down into the interview rooms with the individual teams, is it there at the combine? Is it at hotels? When you walk in, is it just the general manager? Is it a whole group of players? How did you handle that whole part of it? Just walk us through that process.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. When you get there, like if you went to the Pro Bowl, I mean the Senior Bowl, or any of the other bowl games for college athletes, usually there you'll have met with a good amount of teams. So if you've done that, you're sort of already structured and set up to where when you get here, you won't have to meet with as many teams and coaches and stuff like that. For me, I didn't do the Senior Bowl. I passed on it. So when I got there, I had a lot of meetings, and you get this card and it has the times you're supposed to meet with each coach or each team. You don't know who's going to be in there. You don't know, you know, if anybody's going to be in there. I have a funny story. You know, when I went with multiple teams, it was, a lot of coaches in there, a lot of, you know, head personnel guys. But then when I, like, for example, when I went with the Philadelphia Cardinals, I mean, the Eagles, there was absolutely nobody in there. It was just a TV screen. And so I walked in like, you know, am I supposed to leave? And then the screen turns on and it's just, you know, a guy. I don't know if he's a psychiatrist or something, but he just talks to you for the amount of time that you have in there. So, I mean, you would have no idea. I mean, there, it could be anything when you walk through those doors. You know, it all depends on how the team wants to set it up. And each room is different. But if you went to the Senior Bowl, you're probably going to have less meetings with teams. So, you know, it all depends on how many teams want to see you, who wants to see you, and stuff like that.
I know you're a fan of the game of college football, but you're also there with the Green Bay Packers. So I don't know how much time, if any, you've had to see any of these players. I've read that you've talked with Josh Rosen some. I'm curious if you have a thumbnail on what Josh Rosen needs to show, in your opinion, at the combine, and what you think of him as a potential NFL quarterback.
I think Josh is going to be a great NFL quarterback. You know, obviously people, you know, question his will of the game. You know, does he really love football? Does he, you know, all that stuff. Josh is just like all of us. You know, we really love football. But Josh obviously speaks his mind and he speaks what he wants to say. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you can't say somebody doesn't love the game because he's doing other things with his life as well, or he's speaking out on other topics. You can't question that. And I think Josh loves the game. I think he's going to, you know, all he has to do is be himself. Josh has nothing to worry about when he gets there. He just needs to be himself. There's nothing I think he needs to show, because I always say what you put on film already is what you, that's all you need to show. I mean, you have all that footage from those seasons. And when the coaches watch those, when the teams turn on your tape, that's all they have to see. That's all they should have to see. Now it's really the question of who are you off the field? Are you going to be a good fit for the locker room? Are you going to, you know, be this guy that we wanted you to be, the face of the franchise, the leader of the team, you know, all that stuff. That's sort of what they want to see. And Josh, you know, all he needs to do is be himself. He's a smart guy. He's a very great guy on the field and off the field. And I'm sure he'll be fine.
Have you seen any of the other quarterbacks? I could go down the list and throw Sam Darnold's name at you, or Josh Allen. Or have you seen any of these other quarterbacks, and do you have a vibe, a feel about these guys, in particular the ones being talked at near the top?
Yeah, I've seen Sam Darnold. I haven't seen I want to say he's from Wyoming.
Josh Allen, yeah.
Josh Allen, yeah. I haven't seen him too much. I haven't watched him, but I've seen Sam Darnold, and I've seen a lot of Rosen. But Sam Darnold, you know, he probably has a couple questions going in, you know, as far as what can he do from the pocket standpoint. He likes to run around a lot and throw it, and I'm a big fan of it. You know, I feel like in the league, obviously guys like Aaron, they all make it work. And, you know, when you can combine that type of, you know, smarts and being able to run around and make things happen, you know, a guy like Sam Darnold can really pique your interest. So I think he's going to do well, you know, as long as these guys just stay true to who they are once, wherever they get drafted, no matter where, and they really just dig down deep and try to push themselves even farther. I think that'll be fine.
Before you go, and we're talking with Brett Hundley, former Chandler High star, UCLA quarterback, now with the Green Bay Packers. Your season, how would you describe this past year for you?
I think it was a really great learning experience for me, not only to be able to play for a historical team like the Packers, just the opportunity to get out there and finally play, you know, in a regular season. You know, we didn't make the playoffs. We didn't win the Super Bowl, but only one team can win. And obviously you always want to be that team. But for me, it was, you know, it was crazy at first, you know, obviously with Aaron going down and just getting thrown in, you know, my head was spinning and stuff like that. But now, obviously, throughout the season, you know, I felt like I hit my stride for a little bit, and it was just a great, great learning experience for me. You know, I had fun. It was an opportunity of a lifetime, and, you know, I can't wait till next year or this year coming up.
You've had a couple of months to decompress from all of it. What do you need to improve upon coming into next year, Brett, from your view?
You know, I think for me, experience-wise, that was the main thing I needed, and that's exactly what I did need. And to see sort of where what my game does or how it fits into this league. And I think just really understanding everything. You know, I got a grasp of the offense. I got a grasp of the playbook. I got a grasp of what defense has done. I've learned that for years. And I think just understanding my game and how it fits in the league and not trying to do anything more than that. I think just playing my game is obviously what this year has taught me. You know, don't worry about, you know, sitting in the pocket for any length of time. If I got to scramble, I got to run, use my feet, use what God gave me, and just play my game. You know, after all this time and all this, you know, learning, you sometimes get structured into, you know, what to do and how you want it to go. But I think at the end of the game, you know, I've been playing football for a long time. And after this year, I think it's really just be myself on the field. And obviously, you know, I think one of the big things with some bad circumstances as far as taking care of the ball. But other than that, you know, it comes with experience and all that stuff comes as a learning process. So I think after this year, that's the biggest takeaway in just putting my stamp on my game.
It's good to see you back in the Valley for a bit and stay warm out here, then head on back. We appreciate the time and insight as always, Brett. Thanks.
Man, thank you so much for having me on. It's good to see you again, man.
There's Brett Hundley with us, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Hey there. I had 18 uhs, you knows.
Oh, gosh.
That's not bad. It's February.
It's not as bad as usual. Yeah, that's not as bad as usual.
It's February. How long are you in town for?
Just till the first. So I'm only here for a little bit, but then I'll be back probably the first week of April, just training and stuff like that.
We should go hit a golf ball. I'm still not very good, but you've been playing a lot, it sounds like.
Oh, man, we would be perfect together then.
Are you right around the mid-90s?
Yes, I'm 100% right there.
Okay. Yeah.
I was just out there yesterday. My cousin is about to go pro.
That's what I heard.
And I'm over here shooting with this guy. I mean, it's not fun. So I would love to go golfing with you.
Okay, I'll text you. And do we bring Senior along to make sure he's shooting the 115s? Is that how that works? I lost him. No, there you are.
Yeah, not a chance he makes it.
All right.
Not a golfer.
I'll text you on your cut now. I'll let you go to the hen house. Thanks, Brett. See you soon.
All right. Sounds good, brother.
Take care. All right. Before we get out of here, tonight it will be Suns-Memphis. And if you're going to sit and watch Suns-Memphis, it's very simple. You just want the Suns to lose this game. There's no way that they should, in what they've gone through, they've worked this hard to tank, please lose tonight. It's not that hard. There has to be something that comes out today from the U of A. Or is it just going to be, well, we'll see if Sean walks out of the tunnel on Thursday night. You know, come on, guys. At this point, you have to speak on something about the game itself. And for Arizona State, they've got to wake up tomorrow night against Cal. You can't just sit there and say, well, we've had this great season. Because in the last 2 months, it's been uneven. It's been uneven. It's the only way to put it. But the only other thing is Mike Glennon got cut by the Bears. So Mike Glennon does nothing for me personally in terms of being a long-term solution within the realm of the Arizona Cardinals and finding their next quarterback. Mike Glennon as a backup, Mike Glennon as a guy here, I would still take Josh McCown over anybody else. And I've been saying this for 3 weeks. Josh McCown needs to be part of this equation. He is not the long-term answer. If you're one of those saying, oh, he's horrible, he's terrible, you don't get it. This is about building a roster. And you have to have a veteran guy behind that can go out and make the plays when need be, not get crushed, hang in there, be a solid pro. Josh McCown needs to be one of the answers here. The better answer to me, obviously, is go get the young quarterback. If it's A.J. McCarron and Josh McCown, maybe that works. Maybe that works. But if it's anyone else, you know, if it's Case Keenum, if it's Teddy Bridgewater, am I going to feel comfortable? I'm not going to feel comfortable really with anybody of the names that have been out there. I don't believe Kirk Cousins is going to come here. And so, you know, you look at the franchise, like what the 49ers did last season in changing their quarterback situation overnight. Boom. Smart move. What are they going to do here? With the combine now getting underway, you'll hear a lot about the Cardinals, the sound bites coming from Steve Wilks. He'll be at the podium talking today, tomorrow, the next day about the Cardinals. You'll hear from Steve Keim and the quarterback situation. They'll talk very evasively. Which one of these guys makes the most sense to not only get them through just next season? Because the window, to me, there's a very good defensive team that's sitting there. We'll see about Tyrann Mathieu if he's back or not. I would say right now, my gut says no. So there's some interesting side stories to the Cardinals. You guys know me. I don't sit here and do NFL at the drop of every bucket. But I think right now the NFL is the most compelling storyline going this week with the Combine. Edwin Rodriguez is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen produces as always. We appreciate those who sponsor us. We are self-funded. Without that help, we do not do what we do for over 6 years. We appreciate those. We appreciate you for being involved with us every day. Our television show tonight over on Fox Sports Arizona. Have yourself a great Wednesday. Welcome back. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. 16 airings per week. We appreciate the partnership with both the Republic and AZ Central and FSAZ. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics. With next week, we'll be in Las Vegas with GCU men's and women's hoops. We saw that over on the tennis side, they beat San Diego State for the first time in Division I history. So the tennis coach, Greg Prudhomme, is joining us this week on Talk to the Lopes. We go inside and out all things around GCU athletics. Coach, it's Brad Sussmat. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
And not a problem. Greg, let's talk about the season and, more importantly, what just happened over the weekend against San Diego State and what it does for your program.
Yeah, it's great. The season's going well, but in particular this weekend, you know, that's what the last few years have been filled with, just one milestone after another. It's a great sign that the teams are going in the right direction. Recruiting at a new Division I university had its challenges, but one of the benefits for our incoming players was that they get to be part of building a new program and being the pioneers of getting us on the map. And so that's exactly what Sunday was for these athletes. So it was great.
Beating San Diego State, that's a tennis school? I mean, fill me in on that. I don't know my women's tennis inside and out.
Yeah.
Growing up in San Diego, I know that tennis is big. So was this a big milestone win, not just on the surface, but for deep within your program?
Yeah, that's a very safe assumption that tennis in Southern California is strong,
yep.
Whether it's youth tennis, adult tennis, or college tennis. So they're notoriously in and out of the rankings. In fact, their men's team just beat University of San Diego also on the weekend, and the University of San Diego men's side was 16th in the country, and the men's beat them. So the men's and women's team are fairly similar with their success over the years. So, yeah, it's definitely a good moment and a sign of more things to come for us.
Okay, when you first came on board to where the program is now, tell me about the progress you've seen, the lowlights, the highlights. Are you where you want it to be? Are you on track?
Yeah, that's a great question. In my very modest circle or office or neighborhood, I'm a little bit of a historian now, only being here in my 11th season, if you go back to 11 years ago when there was only about 100 acres and 1,000 students on campus and a couple of buildings, I wasn't sure that I wanted to take the job in the first place. And that's after coaching junior college for 9 years. I felt like I had it better at Glendale Community College than taking on this D2 project. Sure glad I did, because yeah, the transformation has been incredible. You know, the president and the executive staff with Mueller and Meyer and those guys, as well as all of our sports administrators, they've put so much heart and effort and resources into the university as well as the athletic program. So I'm just keeping up with the rest of our sports. Any little bit of success we do have, we're just hanging in there and trying to do as well as so many of our other great sports. So I think we're in a good place. And, you know, if you ask me that question in a couple of months, if we can send one of our, if not both of our teams into the national tournament, then we're definitely where I want to be.
Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics. Greg Prudholm is with us talking tennis at GCU. Building a program in terms of recruiting, what is your base of recruiting? Is it Arizona first? Is this more of a national? Do you look at club tennis at the high school level? Fill us in on how you go about procuring that next talent player at GCU.
Yeah, great question. You know, I would love nothing more than to have many local and regional and domestic players on the team. I'm going through a similar path that I did when we were Division II. It was difficult for me to get the best locals, let alone, you know, domestic kids from anywhere in the U.S. because we were kind of, you know, we're off the radar. So we recruit heavily from Europe right now because tennis is probably the second most popular sport in Europe behind soccer. So there are a ton of players over there. And to them, the opportunity to come over and get an education and play college sports is huge. They're not so hung up on the status of what division are you and what ranking are you. So what happened is when we cracked the top 25 in Division II, then I was able to get, I brought in Ahmad Salim, if you remember, was a 5A state champion from the East Valley. So that was huge when we brought him in. We took had a third place Arizona State player. And those guys helped us get top 10 in Division II. Now that we're back to up to Division I, it's going to be a similar path in that the American players, the level that we need to reach our goals, they're not looking at us just yet. You know, there's 260-some Division I men's programs. There's not enough graduating Americans to every year to fill those top 30, 40 teams that we want to be in. So again, we're relying heavily on international recruits, Europe in particular. And I hope that as our, you know, we've had four winning seasons in our 4 years in Division I on both sides. We've had two conference championships regular season on our women, one on our men. So I'm hoping that if we continue that trend, then we will again start attracting the locals and the regional and domestic American kids who are at the Division I level that we're striving for.
Greg, when you you alerted to the facility off the top here, but when the facility is put in place, and I've asked this question of other coaches, and the easy answer for all of them is, oh, it's great, it's made recruiting easier, so on and so forth. I'm curious in tennis, because that's a sport where you're talking about individual, not team. So you're trying to bring in players that are just looking at it one-on-one, not as what is this whole team going to look like. Is your recruiting of tennis different than it is recruiting of, let's say, a baseball coach? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
It's very individual. So your facility, is that really the overriding thing as it is for maybe a baseball player?
Yeah, it's really interesting because we have both dynamics. I mean, there is definitely that sense of individuality, and it makes it – it's one of a tennis coach's challenge in college tennis, I would think, as well as with golf and swimming and some of those other individual sports, because the success that we are having with our team right now it has much to do with our team chemistry, with our great team spirit. And, you know, that trickles down from the great atmosphere that's at GCU in general, on the campus, as well as in the athletic department. So it is challenging as a coach to get those individual sport athletes to really buy into the team chemistry, but they're doing a great job with that. So yes and no. At first, when you're recruiting that individual athlete, you know, they have ideas of, okay, how good is my tennis going to get so when I leave college I can go play on the tour or give it a shot.
Sure.
So, yeah, they want to know that there's a good strength training department. They want to know they have a good tennis court to play on, and hopefully they want to have some great weather, which we have here, and some good coaching so they can keep getting better, as well as good competition. So in that aspect, they may come in very individualistic, but soon after they get here, they do realize the strength in numbers, and they see that when they become a good team player, then they're going to get back. So there's definitely some differences, but there's, once it gets going, there's a lot of similarities. That's now, great. Having said that, I mean, there's a lot of teams that are putting things into their tennis program, which we have goals to do the same as far as getting matches live streamed online every time you play home, having these play site camera systems that can run match analyses for the players and things like that. So that's similar to other sports, and tennis is definitely going in that direction.
That's good stuff there. Before I let you go, then take me through the rest of the season. You're coming off the big win against San Diego State, and what it looks like for you leading up to the WAC tournament. And the fact that the WAC tournament is here this year, I believe, at the Phoenix Tennis Center, that's got to be a positive. But just take me through the next few weeks leading up to that at the end of April.
Yeah, this is go time. I mean, the women are half done already. They played, the girls traveled 5 weeks in a row for a total of 10 matches, then a home match, and then another two away. So, they're already over halfway through their spring season, and they're showing that they're peaking at just the right time. So, next week they're going to head over to Iowa and play Drake and Montana State, and then that'll send them into a conference play. Subjectively, I really felt like they were getting better week to week, but now objectively, we know they're ready for these last few weeks getting into the conference. The men, they still have a lot of tennis to go. They're going to play three matches this weekend at UNM. At the Pacific Mountain Tournament with eight teams in it. Mm. And then they'll go from there to NorCal, play another 18 tournament for another three matches in a row, and then off to Florida Gulf Coast to play two matches. So wow. They're going to be playing eight matches in the next 3 weeks. So we're still in the development process with some of these guys. They're already playing very well with a nice winning record behind them. But we're looking forward to the next few weeks with the men to make those last-minute adjustments and tweaks so that when we get into conference play and then, having that hometown advantage playing the conference tournament, they should be ready.
Anything else I haven't asked you that you feel like, hey, Brad, here's what I really want to get across about where the program is or a specific player? Anything else I haven't asked you over the last 10 minutes here on Talk to the Lopes?
No, I think you hit it. I feel like our path with the tennis program here at Grand Canyon University is very similar with the whole trajectory of the university and the athletic program in general. I mean, we're not only are we up-and-comers, but we've already shown some great results. And, we have a strong coaching staff. We've got great support from the executives and the sports administration. So I think this is, I'm happy to be here as a coach. I'm honored to be here, and I think this is a wonderful place for any student athlete to be at in any sport.
Great.
And I'm working hard to do my part to make sure it's a great place to be on the tennis courts.
Apologies for jumping in on you on that, but I appreciate the time and the visit today. Thanks. Best of luck the rest of the year.
You got it. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Good stuff there. That's Greg Prudhomme. That is Talk to the Lopes. Next week, we will do Talk to the Lopes from Las Vegas. The WAC tournament is going on. President Mueller has said that he will come on with us next week as we do Talk to the Lopes every week here on Sports360AZ.com.